And you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling Show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger and Mika Villas. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing good. Big wrestling weekends where both of you were at shows. This past weekend, we have, more wrestling to come this weekend and a whole lot more to talk about, man.
It's been 1 week since we talked, and I feel like it was just not that long ago. I'm excited, like Danny said, went to some shows, got some shows coming up, and lots of wrestling out there to jump on and get on. I was gonna say get on top of, that just sounded wrong, but let's talk.
So let's go ahead and get started with something we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, and that's SmackDown 1000, the 1000th episode of the second longest episodic television show on cable, as WWE would like to remind you every single time. Of course, Raw number one. And so the show's pretty interesting. And it started with Truth TV. And of course, well, what do you get in Truth TV? A bunch of dance breaks.
Dancing McMahons is what you get in Truth TV.
Yeah, we got the McMahons. We got Stephanie McMahon. We got Shane McMahon returning. Of course, he's the commissioner for SmackDown Live. And the chairman, Vince McMahon, of course, came out. They all had a good old dance. But, you know, it's funny. I like when Shane welcomed Stephanie to the A-Show. I thought that was pretty funny. You know, because that's not really language that the WWE uses.
Well, yeah, but Shane always likes to kind of, you know, play it. Shane likes to kind of break the kayfabe and once in a while. And in theory, you know, as a promoter, you should always feel your show is the best show. I mean, like, and realistically, if Shane's the quote-unquote promoter, then he should feel that he's putting out the best product. And yeah, he's going to kind of rub it in his sister, it's sibling rivalry.
Hey, he might have the A show, but Stephanie's got the better dance moves. Shane has that dad dance down pat, and Steph can still break it down a little bit. I mean, that was what was important during that whole Truth TV segment, right?
It was them dancing, yeah.
I think what was important was to celebrate the McMahons and knowing that even though, you know, that no matter what, at the end of the day, it's not a celebration without the McMahons.
No, of course not. And it's definitely not, SmackDown, a big celebration show without dancing and without, yeah, a big long talk segment to start the show. That's how we like it in WWE.
Well, that's how apparently we like it everywhere.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's more entertainment, less on the wrestling.
Well, that's what the E means. Entertainment.
That's what Vince said, and we know Vince would never lie to us.
Now, next up, we get the Usos defeating Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles. Of course, Bryan and Styles will be facing off at Crown Jewel for the WWE Championship. The Usos win, of course, showing that AJ and Daniel aren't on the same page. You know, they're future opponents. We've seen that happen many times. Fine match. At the end, Daniel Bryan takes the L for his team, protect the champion once and for all. All right, then we get the New Age Four Horsemen here as Evolution make their first ever appearance together as a foursome since, you know, their heyday.
If you see, the funniest thing is they talked about how big of an importance they were into SmackDown, but they were technically, the group Evolution was technically signed to the Raw brand in 2003 to 2005. So Evolution as a whole was never really featured on SmackDown. Yes, Batista had a lot to do on SmackDown in the 2000s, and Randy Orton, of course, has been associated with some big moments in SmackDown history, Triple H having his fair share, Ric Flair having a few, but the group Evolution was technically Raw brand. So having them on a SmackDown 1000 show wasn't really a celebration of SmackDown, more of let's get these guys back together.
More of an ego stroking. That's what you want to say. A nice way of just getting us over. We got a pay-per-view named after this group, and it's all about the women, which is hilarious. Let's just put us back on TV because Hunter's in charge and we can.
Well, not to be outdone, though. The men have their very own pay-per-view coming up soon, too. So we can't forget about that, called the Crown Jewel. Part of evolution equality means that everybody is equal. Okay, it doesn't mean that we celebrate one or the other. So the women get their own show, yes, but the men also get their own show at the beautiful Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. If that's still going to happen, yet again, spoiler alert, there's some political unrest in there, which I guess we can maybe hit on a little bit later. But
I'm not trying to die. Let's not.
Yeah. Well, you can't talk about it, but I can. Mm-hmm. Maybe Yellow Man. I don't know.
All right. So. We will talk about that in a bit. But so we have all four guys get on the mic and, Triple H and Ric Flair do their thing. Very solid. You know, Ric Flair may have gotten too emotional. And while he did that cry, maybe forgot a line or he and they are
emotional / drunk, whatever.
Flair and Triple H were themselves. I thought Randy Orton was real funny when he was talking about Triple H. Okay, you're here running the show, and Ric Flair, you're over here, living gloriously through your daughter or whatever not. And then he goes up to Batista and goes, "Yeah, and Batista, you're getting your makeup done, of course, because he's acting."
Well, yeah, and because in Guardians of the Galaxy, they paint his whole body green and put all these weird, like, scars on him and stuff. So that's not just, like, makeup for his face. It's because he has to sit in a makeup chair for probably several hours, in, like, with no shirt on as they paint his whole body.
So with all that, that was kind of funny. But then Batista, the line of the night. I mean, he, pays compliments to the Nature Boy. He pays compliments to Randy Orton. My goodness. I mean, he called him the probably the best wrestler he's ever wrestled, and said that, I stand corrected. He said that Randy Orton has more talent in one pinky than the rest of the wrestlers that Batista has wrestled with in his career.
The guy's in the ring, and he's a teammate. You might as well put him over, because then it makes you look better for associating it with him.
Well, here comes the line on that, right? So after he then pays compliments to Nature Boy, he goes up to Triple H, pays him huge compliments, and tells Triple H he has done everything in this business except beating Batista.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody's thinking that with the way Batista's been talking the last 6 months, that he might be trying to gear up for another, another short run with WWE, possibly. Yet again, of course, his would be between movie filming schedules or whatever. But I think he's made it pretty clear that he wants to return. So you drop a big line that gets some laughs, and maybe generate some interest in you coming back for a few matches. Maybe we get Batista at WrestleMania one more time.
So we have to? I mean, can we avoid this at all? Is there a shot or some kind of preventative measures, like condoms or something, to avoid the animal disease? Because
I think it's way too late for all that.
I'm not bought in for that. I just really don't care to see it.
That's not going to happen, because right now Triple H is on his getting his windbags tour.
Yeah. So then he has to bring Batista so he could beat Batista. If Batista's making a thing that you never beat me. So there we go. WrestleMania, one of your main events, is there's, is half the card on WrestleMania are main events. There's not just a main event, there's multiple main events.
Every other match is the main event.
Yeah, pretty much. So one of them will be possibly Batista versus Triple H's.
Which would make sense.
For the first time, for the last time ever.
So they ended up hugging it out. And left. So that was Evolution. Then we get Miz defeating Rusev to qualify for the WWE World Cup. Of course, in English, coming out to distract Rusev, playing with the whole thing, what happened between English and Lana in the hotel room in some state in the Midwest that I can't remember right now on the top of my head. But it doesn't matter because the whole Midwest sucks, so that's fine.
Yeah, they all blend together, doesn't it?
So there you go. We get The Miz, the first non, like, 2000s legend to be qualifying for the World Cup. Although I take it back, no, a couple of them also qualified on Monday Night Raw the night prior. But we got half and half here in the roster. Becky Lynch was the guest on The Cutting Edge. We see Edge is growing his hair again. This time parted down the middle, side to side. And she cuts a wonderful promo on Edge, which ended with, "Be careful getting out of the ring. We don't want you to break your neck again," or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. Again, another shot fired. This night, I mean, people were given free reign to say whatever the heck they wanted. And no matter how much of a heel Becky Lynch tried to be, these fans couldn't get enough. They love Becky Lynch.
Yeah. I mean, how can you not? You know, and yet again, nobody was given free reign to say whatever they wanted. It was still WWE. Everything was still scripted, okay? They just tried to make, you know, they just tried to make a little more tongue-in-cheek with some of these things. But it's still the same WWE, man.
Yeah, Becky telling Edge to be careful not to break his neck on the way out of the ring. That was pre-approved in advance, ran back.
Yeah, 500 people.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure, but it was hilarious.
It was one of those, like, oh, moments, you know?
Yeah. Oh, snap.
So then we get a title change. The Bar defeats The New Day to win the tag team titles. We have new champs on SmackDown Live 1000. So this is a big moment.
I mean, like, the first big real wrestling moment of the show. Yeah. You know, you had tag team champions. And then, of course, afterwards, you had what would SmackDown be without a Big Show? A Big Show turn. Okay. A Big Show heel turn. So that was another nostalgia piece at the end when everybody thought Big Show was coming out to help. And then he, you know, attacks the Usos. You know, it's that brought me back. You know, that was a good nostalgia moment.
The Florida champion, the Big Show coming out. Again, New Day never needed the titles. They just had them. They're props. I mean, the titles are like pancakes. I forget that they have either one until they show up and go, oh, yes, they have pancakes and they happen to be title holders. Whoop-de-doo. So now we have maybe Big Show back in the mix. Pancake mix, get it? And it'll be interesting. I don't know. I don't care for Big Show. I don't care for
Big Show. Is it going to be interesting with Big Show, though? Is it?
Yes.
Has it been interesting with Big Show for like 10 years?
It will be interesting because Cody, those would be my Cody designated bathroom breaks.
There you go. Yep.
Interesting. How much I have to go potty now thanks to the Big Show being back on the team.
If anything, this is Paul White telling the whole universe, he doesn't have to be part of the show. He is the show.
He's the Big Show, y'all. The Big Show tonight.
All right, so next we get another big moment here as Rey Mysterio Jr. continues on his quest to wrestling Japanese wrestlers. I guess, you know, it's continuing on from, you know, New Japan. WWE said, hey, I'll book you with Shinsuke on your first match. You'll feel like you're in New Japan still. Don't even have to miss anything. They wrestled a pretty good match. This is a World Cup qualifier, which, of course, to the surprise of absolutely no one, Rey Mysterio defeats the United States champion. And, yep, so there we go. We get the last person to qualify, Rey Mysterio advancing, being the last man to qualify for the World Cup of the WWE. And that's the last match of the night. Then immediately the match is over, and then the music hits, the arena goes dark, and the referee gets Mysterio out of the ring because the Dead Man returns to SmackDown Live. The Undertaker, and he briefly cuts a promo on Triple H and the match that will be the Brothers of Destruction versus D-Generation X.
Yeah.
Who are once again reunited for like the 20th time in its 20-year history.
Yeah, well, the Brothers of Destruction are, you know, the yet again reunited, but they fight, they reunite, they fight, they reunite, you know, they do all the brother cliches, but yeah, and realistically, they talked, you know, you can't have SmackDown without The Undertaker. Yet again, in SmackDown in the 2000s, like, The Undertaker was the big drawing star. He was there, you know, even when you look back to when he was the American Badass, like, he had some of his most memorable moments on SmackDown, you know, and then yet again, Teddy Long, you know, the cliche of, you know, a heel would piss him off. Tonight, you're going one-on-one with The Undertaker. You're like, shit, no! You know, like, come on. If Teddy Long came out, okay, if he wasn't making a tag match, he was putting you in a one-on-one match with The Undertaker, okay? Like, there wasn't a whole lot he was doing when he come out to that Rodney Mack music that he used for way too damn long, okay? Mac Militant, okay? What did that mean? It was Rodney Mack, not Teddy Long. Teddy Long was just Rodney's manager, and Rodney didn't last in the WWE nearly as long as Teddy did. But yeah, yet again, cool to see The Undertaker on SmackDown again. The big entrance, the lights, the, you know, the music, etc. But I think fans, you know, enjoyed seeing him. But at the same time, everybody, of course, you know, it's 2018, man. You don't just want to see people pop up and make appearances. You want to see matches. Everybody was hoping to see The Undertaker come out and attack somebody or have a match or something. Everybody, of course, was hoping The Rock was going to be there. We talked about The Rock possibly making an appearance, you know, about whether he was going to show up live or whether he was going to come be a satellite or something. He didn't do either. He sent out a tweet. He sent out a tweet and said, hey, guys, congratulations on 1,000 episodes. And he gives, like, an amusing anecdote about, like, coming up with the name of SmackDown. Like, it's like, we're going to start a show. What do you think he calls it? Like, oh, SmackDown. It'll be funny. And, like, and Vince ran with it, you know, like, Rock apparently made a half-assed joke, kind of like he did a lot of his things, like the "Can you smell what the Rock is cooking?" Like he tried to think of something stupid that made no sense, and then we catch on, and it did. But he started doing that when he was a heel because he was supposed to be saying dumb stuff to get people agitated. But then it caught on and it became popular for whatever reason. So The Undertaker, the big thing at the end that everybody waited for. Those who were waiting for The Rock, unfortunately, were disappointed. Yet again, I mean, there were some decent matches on the show, you know, some interesting action. But the main thing, of course, was it's a nostalgia show. It's basically like they did every once in a while they would do the old school Raw and bring back a bunch of people and all this
stuff. Right.
That's kind of what it was, except it was in a 2-hour format instead of 3 hours. So you had people you hadn't seen on SmackDown in a while, like backstage segments or, you know, in the ring and, yet again, but it made for, you know, some fun nostalgia here and there, but as far as an actual wrestling show continuing the storylines, they didn't seem to have as much focus on that. But you know, with the exception of The Rock's non-involvement, I think it's kind of what everybody seemed to expect. Have some wrestling, but mostly you'd have some kind of cool nostalgia moments. They'd show flashbacks of, you know, top moments in SmackDown. I mean, realistically, they could have just showed two hours of Eddie Guerrero clips from SmackDown, and everybody would have just been as happy. If you just, the 2 hours of the best of Eddie Guerrero on SmackDown, and you just didn't do any other things, you didn't have to put any new footage, I think it probably still would have been just as highly watched.
Yeah, I think they would have gotten the views and the Nielsen rating share and beat out Raw as they did, no matter what they put on, because it was such a milestone. And there is a huge nostalgia thing for SmackDown because it was on broadcast TV for the longest time. You didn't have to have cable. You could turn on your regular television and watch wrestling. So for those back in the days when people didn't have a chance to watch Raw. They will watch SmackDown. So these are all of their childhood memories coming back for one brief moment with your old GMs, which are, you know, people popping up, with your Taker popping up. Even though he wasn't in a match, we want to see him in a match, but we followed the product. People who might have turned in for nostalgic reasons were like, oh my gosh, look, it's Taker. He still looks like the same. And it's a good thing that they didn't put him in a match, because he would have looked horrible perhaps, and that would have just ruined people's childhood memories. And we don't want to do that until, you know, our pay-per-view comes up. But it was exactly what I expected. I didn't expect a whole lot of matches. Had I been one of the live audience members, I would have not expected a lot, being that episode had to be a throwback episode. Whenever you get throwbacks, you don't get a whole lot of live action. It's always a lot of tape, and you just have to sit there and grin and bear it. So they got great segments. They got to see people like the Cutting Edge and all that loveliness, and the McMahon breakdown, like we said, but it was what it was. And it is, you know, when they do 2000 SmackDown episodes, it'll be the same thing, just including stuff from the 1000th episode.
Well, and I agree with what you said with the SmackDown. Like, there were, you know, I mean, you'd even see people like friends of ours on Twitter and stuff, like, talking about, you know, yeah, maybe their family didn't have cable in the O's, but you could catch, you know, SmackDown on UPN, because if you had a set of rabbit ears, you could watch it. You know, also not just during the O's, like, I didn't always watch Raw, but I always made sure to watch SmackDown, because SmackDown was the wrestling show. Raw, you had a lot more of your segments, a lot more talking, a lot more, you know, longer drawn out silliness and bigger stars. But SmackDown was where you had a little bit more exciting characters, a little bit longer form matches. You'd have TV feuds, you know, that wouldn't necessarily culminate in a pay-per-view match, but they would have three or four matches within a month or two on TV. Like, I would always make sure to tune in for SmackDown. But if I missed Raw, I wasn't going to be too upset, because also I knew that while watching SmackDown, they were going to show me 10 minutes of what happened on Raw that week. So I knew, you know. But yet again, it was a nostalgia show, you know, fine for what it was, light on the wrestling, heavy on the nostalgia. But it did move some of the stories forward. And, you know, we got a couple people announced for this Crown Jewel, you know, tournament thing, whatever it may be or may not be, is things in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia and between the United States are getting a little tense this week.
Well, let's talk about it. Let's talk about what's going on with Saudi Arabia right now. So here's what we got. There's a reporter that went into the Saudi Arabia consulate. Of course, he's a Saudi Arabia citizen, and he went into the consulate in, I believe, Turkey. And he's also, though, an American citizen. All right, so he's got dual citizenship. So he went into this place, and apparently he was interrogated for some stuff. He was going to get some papers, and I guess he was going to get married or whatnot. But they ended up holding him, interrogating him, and the word is that he was killed by the Saudi Arabia government or somebody within that building. And right now, basically, there's supposed to be this big summit in Saudi Arabia. A lot of the big businesses in the United States, CEOs of large corporations, have opted not to go because of this. You know, the United States government, as far as, you know, the Congress, is saying let's not have anything to do with these people right now until we figure out what happened. Of course, we get the federal government saying, hey, innocent until proven guilty. And so with that, WWE is having this huge show at Syria, in Saudi Arabia. Senators and other people are advising WWE not to hold the show while we're waiting to figure out what happened. So right now, technically, it is going to be, you know, held in Saudi Arabia. However, this past week on Monday and Tuesday, they mentioned the Crown Jewel pay-per-view, but did not mention at all that it was happening in Saudi Arabia. And I think they may have taken the location off on the website for a moment. I know they took it away from the app, but it's now back on the app. It says Saudi Arabia. So will this show happen in Saudi Arabia? Should it not happen in Saudi Arabia? You know, I think I'm with the majority here where if there are questions and if there's a possibility that this truly did happen, this is not the time to be associated with, you know, the government of Saudi Arabia, no matter how much money they're paying, if indeed this seems to be what's going on. It's crazy, but you also don't want to put yourself in that position where you're getting into business with a very shady government.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And forget the religious beliefs and cultural beliefs with women. That's you know, that's a whole different thing. But if they're killing somebody in their technical soil within another country, and this is a guy who's also an American citizen, and I'm sorry, how can you say you don't know where he's at? He came into your consulate. There is footage, and there's no proof that he ever came out.
Well, okay, so, I mean, and yeah, we can talk about the difference in the cultural and the religious things, and that was discussed pretty heavily with the last show, but you move into political, and you move into, you know, possibly killing an American, you know, and kind of being shady about it, like, not only are you okay now, there now some people may question the safety of anybody who would be traveling with WWE into the Saudi Arabia because there may be some political unrest. There may be people locally that are not as kind to Americans now, you know, because of what's going on. But not just that. I think it's also that WWE is a publicly traded company, and this is making it a very tense issue between the United States and Saudi Arabia. A country which, throughout a lot of differing beliefs, has still been a fairly decent ally to the United States within, you know, the Middle Eastern region since you know, for 20 years or so. The biggest thing is that it is a publicly traded company, and anytime you do business with somebody who has some kind of possible negative press on them, they can affect your bottom line. Now, yes, this is a sold show, and WWE will still make their money from this show, but how does it affect the perception with their stockholders? How does it affect the perception with the rest of the United States and some of the people, you know? I mean, depending on how the situation goes within the next few weeks, the next few months even, you know, could reflect very negatively on the WWE to where people maybe say, hey, man, if things go like super south with this, right? Like we literally start sending American troops into Saudi Arabia, like for what, you know, like a lot of, there may be a lot of anti Saudi Arabia sentiment, and people look and say, hey man, WWE's got this big money contract with them. They went over there and they took all this money from them. Maybe I don't want to give my money to WWE now because it's funding these guys who aren't friendly with the United States. Like, I think that's the biggest thing. Take away all the other elements of, you know, of the differing culture. WWE is an American company, and you essentially have to kind of side with the American people and your government and play cautious. And that's what America's doing with the situation now. So if they don't go to Saudi Arabia, one of the rumors is that they would still have this show, but have it in the United Kingdom. As WWE is on a UK tour, the 2 days prior for 2 days, you know, leading up to this show that's supposed to happen, the Crown Jewel. You know, I would assume the way the stories are still going, they're gonna have this show somewhere. I think the question is just now where and what implications does it have on WWE moving forward for the rest of the year, if not even into 2019, depending on how things go, how this situation plays out.
WWE was already called out last week tonight. Don Oliver put the WWE on blast for having this show in Saudi Arabia, for not immediately parting ways with the Saudis for this show. As it stands right now, whether there's no whether this man is missing and presumed dead, and there's audio evidence of his perhaps torture and death at the behest of the Saudi government, is what the story is all coming to say. So the fact that the WWE is not standing firmly, fully, and running in the opposite direction is troubling on so many fronts. Yes, they have investors and stockholders that they have to answer to, and you know, by all rights and means, want to look into this as much as possible. But the human capacity of it, all of the work that they do as far as charitable organizations and just humanity in general, begs for them to step away politely but quickly, and to have said, we will not go based on the fact that there is unrest there. You have a country already in for our purposes in turmoil as far as how women are represented and treated, and you've already gone there and left behind your female talent and staff, and now there's something else, I almost want to say bigger, but just more grotesque than the treatment of women in this country, and the fact that they have not said, hey, we're done here, thanks for the opportunity, we're going to move on, is deplorable, just from a humanities standpoint. Business aside, the human factor here, the fact that this man has lost his life, or allegedly lost his life, is just enough for me to say, no, being a performer, even a male performer, I'd be concerned if they said, yeah, we're just go ahead and have the show there anyway. An American going to Saudi Arabia right now, I think that if nothing else, the government needs to step in and say, no, nobody go there, because it's just not safe. It's just not the right time. And perhaps that's what the WWE is waiting on, for officially the United States to pull the plug on their show, so they don't look like they didn't want to go for their own reasons. But that's stupid as well. So I can't respect the business aspect of it, because the humanities aspect of it just outweighs any dollar denomination that anybody could throw at you. If that's the case, we can let racist groups and Nazis and everybody else buy WWE. It's ridiculous.
Totally. I mean, you guys make all great points. I don't think any amount of money should basically show what kind of integrity you have. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, they show, I mean, we don't know for sure, but numbers lead us to believe that they're grossing around $40 million for these shows. So for WWE to say, hey, we have integrity and we can't hold this show here with this controversy right now, so we're going to cancel the show and give up $40 million. You know, they're bringing, you know, Brock Lesnar. They got Shawn Michaels out of retirement. And then they're leaving all this money behind, which... leaving the money and doing what's right and not holding the show is what they should do. But man, if they do have the show there, it's going to show us really what many people already assume they would know about Vince McMahon, and is that, you know, he's about one thing.
Money, money, money! Money!
So with that, we shall see. Now, but we are having the show though. Crown Jewel is going to happen November 2nd. Where? That's to be determined. The World Cup we have happening. We'll have 4 participants from SmackDown Live, from participants from Monday Night Raw. John Cena, Kurt Angle, Seth Rollins, and Dolph Ziggler for Raw. Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, The Miz, and Rey Mysterio are your SmackDown Live representatives. If you had to pick right now, who would win the World Cup?
Dude, my picks have been so bad for so long. No, even when you're asking me to just pick winners, like I was trying to, you know, we talked about, you know, like the G1 and like, you know, who do you think is going to win this block? And I was, man, I've just been so far off from anything. Yet again, I would say it would be somebody, you know, who the Saudi audience would want to see succeed and do well. So I would say maybe like Rey Mysterio comes in and has this big return. He wins this tournament. He hasn't, you know, he has an outstanding year, you know, and wrestles the top talent on, you know, across the V. Yeah, that has to be my guess.
I was going to say Rey as well, because he's back in the mix and you can put Mysterio in there with everybody. He's got a good group of guys who could base for him as he flies around in slow motion, as he's an older gentleman now, you know, not the spring chicken that he once was, but he could still win this tournament. And he is a world renowned name since he's gone away and come back to the E. So Rey is the pick of my generation.
All right. Well, I am going to pick a different name, and I'm going to pick the only wrestler in the World Cup who did not need to qualify to be in the World Cup, and that is John Cena. Because if you're going to have anyone win the inaugural WWE World Cup, it's going to be John Cena. I mean, come on. Let's be real. He's going to get a huge pop wherever it happens, Saudi Arabia, the UK, you know, and everybody just loves John Cena. Love him or boo him, all of the kids will buy his merchandise.
Yeah, it's true.
And hey, who knows? You could take the crown jewel. Maybe they do a crown jewel belt, and you can add a spinner to it.
No, but no.
He doesn't count as a real championship, so he doesn't win 17. He stays tied with Nature Boy. See, that's my only issue, is if he wins and there's a title, he's a 17-time.
No, because Braun won the greatest Royal Rumble title, and that's not considered a championship.
We're not talking about Braun. Braun is a different monster compared to Cena. Braun is
a whole different breed, yeah.
Yeah. You throw a title on Cena, he's a world champion. It doesn't matter what it's called. It could be the title of chicken wing eater of the world. He's now a 17-time champion. That's just what's going to happen. WWE will claim it's a championship for him and nobody else.
If it's going to give him another reason to sell more spinner belts, and you know they will sell, they will sell more than pancakes.
Not pancakes.
So, yeah, I could see that happening. So John Cena's my pick. All right, we'll talk more about Crown Jewel as we get closer to the day. We have, 3 weeks left. Kevin Owens is not going to be participating in Crown Jewel, as he's been out, a week or so ago. He was written out from TV as he had to have surgery.
On both legs, apparently. Both ankles, right?
Knees.
It was his knees, okay. I thought the picture was of his ankles.
It's funny. I believe that he tweeted out a photo of his legs all wrapped in bandages and said something to the extent of they had a 2-for-1 sale at the hospital.
Yeah. Get one free or something. Yeah, that's the picture I saw. Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. I think it was double knee surgery, which. You know, hey, might as well. I mean, Sammy, who's his partner in crime, and, you know, it's out for a long time. If he's hurt, might as well. I mean, they're not uber maximizing his potential right now, so why not? But, man, I hope it's a speedy recovery. Kevin Owens always been one of my faves, and great character, gets over, great heel. So I hope he comes back better than ever.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, and like you said, some, you know, they're they're kind of utilizing, but at the same time, like, if you're going to take a lengthy amount of time off, you allow a lot of different injuries to heal, you know? Yeah. So sometimes that may mean getting surgery on one thing, but you're also letting multiple nagging things go, or in his case, you know, hey, this one's really bad, this one's kind of bad. I mean, I'm gonna spend, you know, 6+ months rehabbing anyways. Might as well come back like powerful and better than ever, so that I don't. Because the thing is, too, is if you get one side, you know, basically it's like a right and a left kind of thing. If one side you're gonna write with all the time, then when you go to try to have to write with your left hand looks like crap. Okay, so you might, you know, and then you go back to having a room to write with your right hand, and then your left hand just goes back to being crap still. Like, it's, you might as well, you know, take 6 months, 9 months, you know, a year, whatever, heal up everything, come back bigger, better in every way, shape, or form, you know, rebuild all that, you know, Seth Rollins stuff. And, but when Kevin does come back, I will be very excited. Yes, he's starting from when he first debuted in NXT, his stuff in WWE throughout has been just wonderful. No matter where he's been up and down the card, he's just put on fantastic stuff, wrestling wise, segment wise, yeah, entertainment wise, he's done well. Twitter, he uses social media within character well, you know. He understands the multifacets of what it takes to be a professional wrestler and then a sports entertainer, and he does them all at such a high level. Wish him absolutely the best of luck, and we'll be anxiously awaiting your return, my friend.
I can't say anything better. I mean, seriously, get everything done, get a little nip here, tuck there, chill out, hang out with the family, and get better and come back and kick a little ass.
All right, so lastly, before we close out the show, I know we're a little behind on the Mae Young Classic Season 2, but finally, I think we've all been caught up with the first round matches. So let me just break it down here via the bracket. We have Meiko Satomura defeating Killer Kelly. Mercedes Martinez defeating Ashley Rain. Lacey Lane defeating Vanessa Craven. Tainara Conti defeating Jessie Alaban. Toni Storm defeating Jeannie. Hiroyo Matsumoto defeating Rachel Evers. Mia Yim defeating Allison Kay. Caitlyn defeated Kavita Devi. Tegan Nox defeated Satara. Nicole Matthews defeated Isla Dawn. Rhea Ripley defeated MJ Jenkins. Casey Catanzaro defeated Reina Gonzalez. Io Shirai defeated Zia Brookside. Suxis defeated Ariel Monroe. Diona Purrazzo defeated Priscilla Kelly. And Zia Lee defeated Karen Q. Apologize for butchering some of those names, but that's just what I do.
That's what he does. Sorry, folks. Yeah.
So, very eventful here. We had 32 women start out. So, we had a lot of great matches. 16 matches. And a lot of great action here. So, yeah. So let's kick it off with, so far, our favorite match of the first round. I'll be interested to see what flavors you have. But for me, my favorite match of the first round, it wasn't that close, but it was, this one, they definitely did not have a lot of competition. Mia Yim versus Allison Kay was my favorite match of the first round. I think these two ladies were crisp. Of course, they're great. They've kill it in the independence the last few years. Both of them had stints in Impact Wrestling and many other places. But here, this matchup was definitely my favorite one of the first round.
Oh, so, I mean, I had a couple different matches that I really, really liked. Yet again, you know, Mia Yim, AKA, yet again, was really good. Just, and it's one of those that they fought each other many times over the course of time. One of the matches that I really liked, and because I felt that it had a very strong the fans really got into it was Rachel Evers versus Hiroyo Matsumoto. And I really like Hiroyo Matsumoto's stuff. I remember actually seeing her in Ring of Honor as she was part of the ship. She's a former Shimmer Tag Team Champion. No, she competed for the Shimmer Women's Tag Team Championships in 2011 when WrestleMania was here in Atlanta. So I remember seeing her in the Shimmer Showcase match at the Ring of Honor at one of the Ring of Honor shows that weekend. Really taken by her at the time, just her charisma and her strength. She has gotten so much better since then. And, so excited to see Hiroyo included in the 32 for starters. But you know, Rachel Evers, yet again, as Rachel Ellering on the independent scene, absolutely top tier talent, one of the independent scene's best. And to see them, and Rachel has, you know, not only competed in Florida a lot, but also competed for multiple times for on NXT TV. So when she came out, the crowd was already behind her, but the crowd drew into the matches. Now there were a lot of matches on this first round that were really good, but nobody cared. The crowd sat on their hands and waited for a finish. And I think that hurt a lot of them. You know, you look at Isla Dawn, Nicole Matthews. It was a good match, but nobody cared. Okay. The fans sat on their hands and waited for big spots and the finish. I would say my second favorite match in the tournament was Casey Catanzaro and Reyna Gonzalez. And for this sheer example that myself included and the fans at Full Sail had no idea or very little idea of who either woman was coming into that matchup, but they definitely remember their names coming out of it. And it's because Casey did some amazingly agile, flashy maneuvers, but you saw a lot of personality out of Reyna. And after the match ended, after all of Casey's amazingly athletic stuff, Reyna basing for her like a flippin' boss, and they both played so well into each other. The aftermatch stuff with when they were after they got the pin, and Reyna's over there in the corner, like steaming, like almost crying, almost screaming, freaking out, like she's looking like she wants to just go and beat the crap out of Casey, but and maybe beat the crap out of the ref. Like you're not sure what's going on in her head, but there's so much emotion on her face. And she pulls it down, and she's like, no, this was supposed to be my moment. Like, I was supposed to be coming out. Like, this was supposed to be my time. And, like, this girl stole it from me. And, like, she pulls it down, and somebody's like, and then they, like, go up. And there's, like, this, they're like, okay. And then it gets really tense, and the crowd was into it. Like, the crowd was into it. Like, everybody's like, holy crap, is she going to beat the crap out of her? Or is she going to shake her hand or whatever? And then she shakes her hand and picks her up on her shoulder and kind of carries her around, like, shows her respect. Now, to me, that moment after the match, the emotion shown by both women was so much that that left me wanting to see so much more from both of them, not just the match, but the after effect of their characters and their personas. And so to me, even though maybe the match itself wasn't as highly touted, maybe wasn't as competitive, to me, that was a match that I walk away from the first 16 remembering. Because of the amazing action, but that after segment that established who they both were so much better. You know, but we talked leading up to it as people were named, just the amazing list of names that were in it. You know, people from last year, independents, people that we've personally seen a whole lot, such as Isla Dawn and Priscilla Kelly. You know, we've seen these women grow here in Atlanta. Wrestling for Atlanta, Wrestling Entertainment, and around the independent scene. But those are my, I would say, so my favorite match that I could probably go back and watch several times would be Evers and Matsumoto, and then just the Casey Catanzaro and Reyna Gonzalez. Just as a whole, from when they first came out all the way to when they went to the back was a whole thing that makes me want to see more of these women on NXT TV and WWE TV and see what they can do and what they can bring and how their characters and their personas develop.
I think my match that I loved during the first round was there were two women who've been in the independents, who've bust their ass in just so many different ways. One of them had, I guess you would call it measure of success, because she was on TNA. She was a part of the Beautiful People, Ashley or Madison Rayne, but Ashley Rayne for this contest, making it to the WWE, how she was in, you know, way back in the day, this little bitty blonde thing. Nobody thought she was going to make it. She was in Shimmer as a part of a tag team. She makes it to TNA, becomes part of Beautiful People. She's working. She's there in TNA. She does so much. And then she leaves. She goes to Ring of Honor for, you know, a cup of coffee. And finally in the WWE, you know, where her counterparts in the same kind of time frame, your Angelina Loves and your Velvet Skies, they never made it to WWE. And she was the least out of the three of them, but the one who's, you know, not that they didn't work hard, but just worked her ass off all over the place, literally coming back as, you know, just having a child and coming back into wrestling after stepping away to, you know, be a mom for a little bit. It was good to see her against Mercedes Martinez. Mercedes is that road warrior. She was there last year. People are familiar with her from the Mae Young Classic, but then you kind of, I can go back and remember Mercedes in her early inclinations way back in the day when she, you know, first started, when you see her out here and that rough edge is still there, that attitude is still there, but what's more importantly there is that hard work and that can do spirit, where she is literally going to fight to her last to achieve a win and to achieve her goal, which is to just be there to represent and to show what she has to offer the wrestling world. So they both come from different backgrounds per se. Mercedes never getting that huge television break that Ashley received, but both of them working hard, and Mercedes just, you know, keep pushing forward. She's not your atypical women's wrestler, especially when the WWE is concerned. So knowing her story, her path, her journey to get there and to get there again and to see her kind of shine through and then work with somebody who was along the same path as her, but their paths veered differently and they wound up in that same spot that they wanted to be in all those years ago is amazing for me. I also, of course, like seeing our girls. I like seeing Priscilla Kelly in a WWE ring. That for me, I got goosebumps. I was excited. I felt like a proud parent and just somebody just overjoyed to see someone who we are all very familiar with in a WWE ring, to see her do her thing and to know her body of work from its infancy into where she is now, and knowing that this is just a small step for her, that there's so much more that she has in her and her abilities. Watching her against Deonna, you know, the match for me, it might have been short in time, but it seemed to go on forever because both of these ladies, they work hard. Deonna, of course, has been back and forth with WWE, but watching Priscilla Kelly in a WWE ring, doing her thing and feeling the emotions that she was going through at that time, watching her, it was just amazing for me.
I want to touch on PK and Devi. Now, in the video, you know, every single match, one of these matches had a little video package attempting to kind of introduce these women to the fans who may not know them, right? And so they talked about Priscilla Kelly in her thing about how she's a master of mind games and all, and Renee Young brought it up, and they brought it up in commentary multiple times. She's a master of mind games, and we know the different things she's done. We've seen her in AWE, we've seen her in Shine, we've seen her, you know, some of the stuff she's done in Japan in the last 6 months. I've seen bits and pieces of her time in DDT. You know, she likes to do a lot of sexualized things. She's Hell's Favorite Harlot. She likes to kind of taunt her opponents and try to get in their heads by licking them, by doing pelvic gyrations on them, these kind of things. So I was curious to see how her mind games translated to WWE, okay, and how, you know, how toned down she was going to have to be in these things. her mind games for that match with Deonna, literally all she did that was you know, an attempt at a mind game was when they went for a handshake, Deonna extended her hand, and Priscilla slapped her hand away. That was it. Other than that, it was a clearly straightforward match. You know, it was on the shorter end, you know, the under, you know, 5-6 minutes, where some of these matches went upwards of 10 minutes. I was disappointed because I felt that, to me, that, you know, and yet again, that's not all of who PK is. That's not all she is. But that is a large part of what is setting her aside and what is making her stand out. You know, they mentioned briefly that, you know, Renee made something, you know, oh, she sees shades of Paige in her. Okay. And that's something that PK's had, you know, people said, oh, you look like Paige throughout a lot of her career. Similar build, dark hair, very, very fair skin, you know. So she comes in and she worked hard to create a persona that separates her from the pack, that kind of put some of those, oh, you're just a you know, an independent, a low rent page or whatever, put all those aside. And then she doesn't get to showcase that persona at all. So she just goes in there and then they say, oh, you look kind of like Paige. And of course she's wearing purple gear, like her hair's all black instead of having colored streaks in it or whatever. I felt that, I kind of felt upset because I felt that she didn't really get to showcase who she is and what all she can do. She showed some great technical wrestling, but other than that, with the cast of 32 and the Mae Young Classic and just the different personalities and stuff, I don't think she did a lot to stand out. And I was kind of upset by that. You know, I just for her sake, you know, that she didn't get a chance to really show everything that she can do in the Mae Young Classic, in the biggest stage that she's ever had in her career.
Yeah, I can understand what you're saying. I think the bracketology before the whole thing where they broke down the girls way beforehand and they did the video packages, like you said, one of the things that I was surprised is that they said that she was Hell's favorite harlot. Like, I wasn't expecting that at all. From the WWE based on who they are as a company, and especially with this women's evolution going on, I didn't think that they would say the word harlot and have kids look it up to see what it meant, because, you know, it's not a word you hear every day and parents have to explain, and hell, and, you know, all the things that make PK, quote unquote PK, especially right now in her career and in her character. The fact that they said it, I was surprised. The fact that they didn't let her use it brought me back to a WWE reality. There was shades of Priscilla, but it wasn't a full PK experience on that big stage. And I think that has a lot to do with, there's no way in, pardon the pun, hell, they could let her hump and gyrate on this stage where the world, quote, is watching. You can,
well, I get that. You know, but they talked about her being a master of mind games, but then she showed no mind games. I understand that you can't, yeah, you're not going to have her as part of the women's evolution. You're trying to show that women are more than just sexual objects. You're not going to have her gyrating on somebody's face, rubbing her butt on them or whatever, like the things she does to try to mess with people, because that's not part of the women's evolution. That's definitely more divas era type stuff, but they didn't have her do any type mind games. It wasn't like she was slapping and she was kind of choking, and like she didn't even really do anything heelish. It was apart from her slapping Deonna's hand away, she just chain wrestled and then she tapped out. That's what I was sad about, is that they didn't just say, okay, we're just gonna remove that persona from you, we're just gonna say, yes, you're a skilled wrestler out of Georgia. They said she's a master of mind games. She said she's a master of mind games, and all this, that term kept coming up and coming up and coming up. And then she did no mind games. That's what more so was upsetting.
That gives you a hook for next time.
They set the stage. They set the stage for something we were going to see that we didn't see. And then I go, oh, well, I was not paying attention to her very smooth chain wrestling, because I was waiting to see her do some wacky stuff. And then she didn't do any wacky stuff. And so then she gets forgotten about. That's my biggest qualm, is that she just literally, unfortunately, she just becomes one of the ones who people are gonna did not make a memorable impression.
Well, we still have the finals to go at WWE Evolution. We still have to see how, when, you know, the losers of the first rounds and the second rounds, they still typically square off in, you know, some supplemental competition. So maybe we get some mind games later. We're not sure, but I'm fairly positive and hopefully certain that we will see Priscilla Kelly's mind games in the WWE, just not on this setting at this time. NXT, perhaps, maybe even main roster eventually, you'll get to see the full PK experience on a big stage. That's my vision. That's my prediction, y'all.
I think I'm with you on that one. I think, personally, this was the first taste of Priscilla Kelly in WWE. Obviously, she's with Evolve, which is sort of a feeder system. They've had their eyes on her for a while now. She's still young, 21 years old. She's got plenty of time. She still needs to develop a lot. Right now, of course, you know, she's doing her thing overseas. She's, I think, has a lot of more time. And WWE will embrace her eventually for whatever she is, and they'll put the spin on it. I think that it was great that she got this so early in her career. You know, you see other young women who get a shot, and also for their own merit, right? But they also have other ends to the show. Priscilla Kelly, you know, working through Evolve, got the opportunity. Great. She didn't look bad. She looked really good. And I think that means, you know, she continues at it, she'll be welcome again. And all kudos. I thought that she was definitely a standout. A few other standouts, though, to me. Isla Dawn, of course, another one of our AWE favorites. She stood out. Toni Storm and Jeannie, of course, those two have chemistry from their many wars in progress wrestling. So them wrestling in the first round was nice to see. Of course, Meiko Satomura, the legendary Meiko. Wow. It was great to see her in the WWE ring after all these years, getting that shot, being able to be there and be successful and do great and have a great showing. Tegan Nox, of course, I think another favorite of ours. Glad to see her back from injury. Of course, you know, now we know she's injured again, but still, it was nice to see her a great showing. Didn't look like the knee really was bothering her. She had the brace, but yeah. And lastly, Io Shirai. Again, another one that, man, one of the current best ones in the world. And she made her debut here in the Mae Young Classic. And it was great to see her as well. And I really enjoyed the first round. Overall, it's really a really good first round. Can't wait to see the rest of it. I think we are now available through these quarterfinals on WWE TV, so WWE Network, free for only $9.99. But any other standouts that none of us have mentioned?
I think the Xia Li Karen Q match deserves a little bit of recognition, just because yet again the fans came in not really seemingly to care about either woman. But right off the get-go from that stance, when they went to like kind of handshake and it got really tense really quick, that woke that crowd up. And the crowd was into it, throughout the match from that get-go, you know? So to me, that deserves just a mention in itself. I mean, both, you know, Karen Q, of course, is an independent standout and has been for several years. You know, she was part of the Women of Honor, actually, you know, feuding with Deonna Purrazzo for a long time, you know, and Xia Li being in last year's Mae Young Classic, having her first ever televised match, as part of the Mae Young Classic, you know, and she moves on to the next round with the win over Karen. But that the fans didn't really care about either woman when they came out. The reactions were very minimal. But as soon as they got in there and they stared at each other, and you could kind of – and it woke the crowd up. And to me, that's something special, to get the crowd into it when they don't – to get the people invested when they're not. That's sometimes a special skill that isn't always seen in the world of television wrestling. So I think that match and their work in that match, not just the, you know, the personality stuff, but of course, both looking amazingly, you know, just, I mean, they're both extremely athletic. You know, Zaya's, she's finding ways to make her martial arts base into the professional wrestling. Karen Q's extremely athletic and works in martial arts as well as, you know, a lot of mat work. So it was really, really cool to see the crowd go from to oh shit, like right away. And yet again, as somebody watching at home, when you see the crowd get into it, it makes you get into that too.
You want to talk about personality? You had two major personalities in MJ Jenkins, as well as Ariel Monroe. Both of those ladies, Ariel moving down to the Florida area, people familiar with her from the independent scene, and of course her her trainer husband is part of 205 Live, but the crowd there, they were solidly behind Big Swole. Ariel came in with a lot of swagger, a lot of attitude, and you know, did what she does out there. And MJ Jenkins also kind of got fired up in the ring and got the crowd behind her for her match. I think a lot of people, like you said, they weren't naturally invested in MJ Jenkins at first, but just that show of emotions just kind of riled everybody up and kind of got them to jump on board. So it was all about personality in this first round as much as perseverance. And I think that's what stands out for all the matches. The ladies with the most personality, they may not have won the matches, but they did stand out and give you that feeling that I would love to see them somewhere down the road.
And with that, the next few rounds are going to be really fun to see who makes it. Doing our best to stay spoiler free. So we'll be talking about the second round next week. And then going forward, maybe we'll just go ahead and go straight to the quarterfinals as we're getting closer to Evolution, where the Mae Young Classic Finals will be held. So with that is the show for tonight. I hope you'll enjoyed it. As always, make sure if you have not already, go on and subscribe. We're available on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. Subscribe to the FOW Radio Network. We're on the Twitter machine. Give us a follow at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.